I'm speaking today with U.S. Representative Gene Green, who represents the 29th District in Texas, Harris County. Representative Green, you were first elected to Congress in 1992. You've served for a long time. Give me the sort of, an overview of what you would say are the highlights of your career in Congress. The achievements you're most proud of.
Well, it's funny that question was asked this week at a town hall meeting, and I guess in the 20 years I've been in Congress, I think my most successful achievement, of course, in Congress, you don't do things by yourself. You do things either as a caucus or a party, and hopefully bipartisanly. But I would think the greatest thing I ever worked on was the Affordable Care Act. I moved to the Energy and Commerce Committee in 97. I got enough seniority to get to a committee that actually did a lot of health care work, does energy work, which is good for our district too, and telecommunications and environment. But my main thing was being on the committee to deal with health care. I have a district and I grew up in our district. It's one of the highest percentage in the country of people who work who are uninsured. And over the since 97, I looked for ways to expand access to health care in East and North Houston and Harris County. We took baby steps, expanded federally qualified health centers. About 10 years ago, we realized that Houston and Harris County was pretty far behind. Austin had 22 of them. We had at that time 10. We haven't even caught up with Austin, but we have expanded them because the Affordable Care Act actually helped. But even during the President Bush's administration, we were able to get money for expansion of community-based health clinics because we were supported by Republicans, both in Congress and in the White House. The President's budget would always have increased expenditures for federally qualified health clinics. They're similar to a hospital district. They're not free clinics, though. Typically, their patients are either Medicare, Medicaid, or indigent. But they fill in a hole that we have in our area so people can have a medical home in their neighborhood. And the Affordable Care Act astronomically improved on that. We got more money for those, along with the recovery dollars, as people call it, the stimulus, but to expand those. But the Affordable Care Act was literally the best thing I'd ever seen. I was on the subcommittee that helped draft it. During our town hall meetings in 2009, people asked me if I read the bill. I said, 2,000 pages. I said, not only read the bill, but I had 30 amendments to it. I'm big on expansion of mental health opportunity because and try to have parity with physical health. We got that in there. Just so many things in that legislation. But the most important thing was access for an area that's not a wealthy area. And even though we have a lot of tax wealth, because I represent probably the most expensive district in Houston, if you count the refineries and chemical plants and everything else, but we're not a wealthy area. Our median income is half what Westside Houston is. And a lot of employers do not provide insurance to their employees. And we felt it in our district, at least for the last 30 years, actually. So that would probably be legislative-wise. I'm proud of it, and I don't mind defending it, because now it wasn't what I wanted. The legislative process, I've been a legislator, I was a state legislator, House member, and senator. The legislative process is compromise, and frankly, I think we've lost that the last 18 months, but that's another story. But we passed a bill out of the House, for example. I wanted a public option. And in fact, I've co-sponsored Medicare for All legislation for years, but we couldn't do that. In the health reform law in the House, we had a public option under the state exchange. You could get Aetna, Blue Cross, ABC Insurance Company, whoever else, but you would have a Medicare-like option. The Senate couldn't get their 60 votes on it, even with the Democratic Senate, so the compromise was the state exchanges. And the only thing I wanted in that, when the chair of the committee came to me early on and said, you're on the subcommittee, on the full committee, what do you need? I said, the number one thing I need is something that's nationwide, as close to Medicare as we can get, legislative-wise. I didn't get that. But we did get a huge expansion of health care access in our district. Because I knew that in Texas, if we depended on a state match, we have 1 million kids in Texas who or qualify for Medicaid and SCHIP, the state won't come up with a local match. I didn't want anything, I didn't want to ask a dime for state money. And I wanted it to be a national plan. So we would be on parity with New York and California and elsewhere in Texas. The only thing we got was the state exchanges, but we got some really good reforms in that law. When I was a state legislator, I fought with insurance companies, mostly property and casualty, because at one time we actually regulated rates for property and casualty in Texas. That's since been deregulated, but we never regulated health insurance premiums. And insurance companies have done very well financially, but in the health reform law, we put in that they have to spend 80% of every premium dollar goes out in benefits. They get 20% for profit, for marketing, for whatever else. And right now, people are getting checks back who that company, whether it be Blue Cross, Aetna, or anyone else, who didn't spend 80% of their premium dollar, the customers are getting checks back from those companies. You know, that could have been done in the state of Texas, but our state of Texas is not a... we lost our populist effort on regulation of insurance companies back years ago. But I think that's one of the best reforms in the law.
Well, obviously, one of the big reforms in the law, which came up in the Supreme Court ruling, was the expansion of Medicaid, which, you know, the Supreme Court ruled that essentially the federal government didn't have the power to cut off funds for Medicaid if Medicaid wasn't expanded. And a number of states, including Texas, have interpret that to mean they're not going to expand Medicaid at all. Now, what will the practical effects of that be if the state of Texas doesn't expand Medicaid and take the federal money that would come with it?
Well, we will lose a lot of folks who would have access to health care. The reason we expanded Medicaid and the federal government was paying for it the first 3 years, Medicaid is a federal-state program. Right now, typically our Medicaid dollar, 66% comes from the federal government, a third from the state. But this expansion of Medicaid would be 100% paid for by the federal government for 3 years. And then after that, it would go to 90%. So if you're comparing current Medicaid plan, it's so much better deal for the state to have literally free money. And it's been estimated it could be about $100 billion over a three-year period because we have such a high number of uninsured in Texas. Medicaid in Texas is not a wealthy program compared to other states. Not that it's ever wealthy, but you have to be pretty poor to be able to get Medicaid. What we have, though, in our district, particularly in South Texas, we have a lot of working poor. They make too much money, so they can't qualify for Medicaid. Some of them may do SCHIP, but that doesn't cover your family. I mean, that covers your children, but not your wife or husband. So that was the goal of the expansion of Medicaid, to make employers to provide it if you're over 50 employees, giving tax incentives and subsidies to individuals, but also subsidies to small business to be able to compete in a market like a large employer would, but to raise the level of Medicaid for 3 years and see how can we get these people into an insurance product. Medicaid is like an insurance product, and that way they have a medical home. The goal of the Health Affordable Care Act was to provide people a medical home instead of them having to show up in an emergency room when they had a problem. You may have to show up if you have an accident or anything like that, but people are using emergency room as their doctor. And it costs not only, in whether it's nonprofit like we have in the medical center or my for-profit hospitals, Hospital Corporation of America, I have East Houston Regional and I-10s in our district. Their uncompensated care is huge because people show up there. Now, they will treat you and then send you on the Bentav or LBJ. But it shouldn't be the medical home as your emergency room. So that's why we wanted to make sure that people had an insurance product. They could have a relationship, whether it be a federally qualified health clinic. They could use the hospital district. They could use Memorial Hermann if you have Medicaid. And so they wouldn't have to wait until they're actually having an episode. I use myself as an example. I grew up in Houston, was born here. I was about 22 or 23, developed sinus trouble. I have real bad sinus. Any given two or three times a year, I will get a terrible sinus infection. And I just need an antibiotic. I shouldn't have to go to an emergency room to get an antibiotic for my sinus infection. It's the most expensive way to treat me. By having a doctor who knows my background, I can just call in and they'll say, okay, you need a Z-Pack, and that'll get me over it. But the goal of the Affordable Care Act was to have a cheaper way to provide health care, because the most expensive way is through the emergency room, which is what we're doing. And the governor's decision to turn away $100 billion is atrocious. It won't cost the state one dime to say, yes, we're going to take it for 3 years, and at the end of 2015 say, no, we're not going to continue that part of Medicare or Medicaid. But I think what the governor's afraid of, people are realize, hey, this is a good deal. So instead of paying 100%, the federal government only do 90 after 2015. It just, it boggles my mind.
Now, you talked about how in Texas, you know, it's harder to qualify for Medicaid than some other states. The match isn't as good, so on and so forth. I mean, that sort of leads to a question. Why is the state a partner in Medicaid to begin with? I mean, you talked about how you wanted, you know, the public option to keep this, not having any state matching money in this. Why don't we just federalize Medicaid?
Well, I drafted an amendment for that, and the cost is astronomical to federalize it, to take over the third average. Now, the formula on Medicaid has historically been gamed. The state of Louisiana, they've had some very good senators over the years, and they've gamed the formula. And I didn't find this out until when we had our Katrina evacuees come over. We had 250,000 people in the Houston area, most of them were poor folks from New Orleans. Their Medicaid, they were qualified for Medicaid there. New Orleans was getting, it was a 75% federal match and 25% state, whereas we were on the two-thirds, one-third. We were able to pass in the response to Katrina, where the federal government picked up those new residences in the states, whether it be Texas, Alabama, wherever. They picked up the whole Medicaid dollar, but that was only for a short period of time. After 2 years, if those folks didn't go back to Louisiana, they became Texas residents. But there is examples of that in our history of the federal government paying all of Medicaid, but it's always been on an emergency basis. I would love to do that. We'd have to come up with a new, whole new formula or a whole new funding base to do that. And the states originally, and I wasn't around when Medicaid was created, but there were states who were hesitant to get into Medicaid back when it was established. But now, as far as I know, every state does. Even states like Texas who complain about it. I guess the legislature could pass a bill next session that would abolish their participation in Medicaid. I think they would. It's very short-sighted, but knowing what goes on, we have some members in Congress who would like to abolish it. They'd like to abolish Medicare. But the Affordable Care Act was probably the best piece of legislation I work on. I work on a lot of legislation, energy, environment, and earlier, my first two terms on education, I still support expansion of Pell Grants and things like that, but on an individual basis. But, you know, my best thing that I feel like I do is what we do here at home, not what I do in Washington. We do, starting in 1994, we do an annual Citizenship Day. We do it at Houston Community College, North Line, around Flag Day in June. And this was our 18th year, I guess, doing it. And it's not only, it's personally rewarding because you have people who want to become citizens of our country, legal residents, and you just help them for free. Now they should have to pay the fee, but we have a good group of volunteers that come every year from Blue Light Councils, from lots of different groups, and we help people fill out their paperwork. An attorney will charge them $1,000 or $2,000 to do the paperwork. We, at least once a day, once a year, they can do it, and it's also been politically rewarding. My wife jokes we can't go in a hotel in downtown Houston. We go to a banquet without somebody coming up to me and saying, "You helped my cousin or my grandmother," or something like that. And it's the continuity of that service. So we did it again last June, but like I said, it lets people become owners in this country. They're already here legally. They're paying taxes. Why shouldn't they be able to register to vote? And so they need to have citizenship. But this tomorrow, Saturday, we're doing our annual immunization day. We started this in the 90s because when I started getting concerned, Harris County had low immunization rates compared to other urban counties. And I approached City of Houston Health Department and Hospital District and Harris County Health Department. And to a person, they said, "Oh, it's our immigrant population." And I said, but I'm looking at the numbers for Bexar County and El Paso County. Their percentages are higher than ours. Or do we have more immigrants coming to Houston than they do in Bexar County, San Antonio? Well, it was because there was not a correlation or a working together attitude in Houston. So we had an immunization coalition started, and now we have lots of opportunities that immunize children for free instead of them having to go pay for their children to get immunized. So, and we do that tomorrow, and we do it at schools in our district. So it's, you know, as a member of Congress, nobody cares in D.C. about that, but it, you impact the life of your folks. Helping somebody get their disability or a veteran getting their benefits that they've earned. We do that. We've been doing that every day. And, you know, and those veterans appreciate it. And so do my seniors who are having trouble with Medicare and Medicaid. Or, so.
Since you mentioned Citizenship Day, I see on your website that you are a supporter of the DREAM Act.
Yeah.
That's only part of what people consider to be comprehensive immigration reform.
I'm a co-sponsor of that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, what does comprehensive immigration reform look like, and what do you think can and should be achieved?
Well, it would look like similar to what happened under Ronald Reagan in 1986, except it wouldn't be amnesty. In 1986, Congress, and with President Reagan's signature, signed a law that said if you were in the United States by a certain date, then you could prove that, you know, utility stubs, whatever, and you could then file for application to be a legal resident. And that happened. There was no fine for filing for it. There was a filing fee, but there was no fine. And so, my first few years in Congress, we had people we did casework for people who had filed and were still having to get through the system. Since that date, in whatever it was, 1986, we've had like, you know, if not thousands and millions of people come in and who've done nothing here except come to work. They didn't come up to hold up our liquor stores or rob banks, and all they've come to do is work. And I think we ought to look back. Now, 86 was amnesty. Go and sin no more. That is politically not going to happen in Congress. So the comprehensive immigration reform would say, if you're here, you've been here X number of years, and you haven't committed a felony or gotten in trouble, and you would then have a certain number of years, you would get a Social Security number, and it would extend. Right now, if you're going to be a citizen, you have to be here 5 years as a legal resident to apply for citizenship. This would add another 5 years to it, maybe a little more. But to make sure that we're going to get folks who really want to be, naturalized citizens. And they would have to pay a fine. The bill calls for a $500 fine. The filing fee for citizenship is $695. But it's not amnesty, it's a fine. And if you are found to have committed a felony, you know, you're not qualified. And, of course, if you're committed a felony, and it's always been the law in our country, if you're a legal resident or undocumented, and you commit a felony, you'll serve your time, and then you will be deported. It only started being enforced, though, in the mid-90s. And nowadays, it's enforced religiously, almost. So, in fact, that's the Customs and Border Protection. That's their big issue, is they're out looking for those people who have committed felonies and broken our law under executive order. They're not out there just rousting people to see if you're a citizen or not. Let's get rid of the outlaws first, and that's enough job. That's a big enough job we're trying to do now.
Okay. There's now a push by some Democratic candidates and office holders to make the DREAM Act part of the Democratic DNC platform.
I would hope it would be. In fact, I would hope comprehensive immigration reform would be. I thought it was part of the Democratic, you know, because the DREAM Act is part of comprehensive immigration reform. We did try it. We split off the DREAM Act in 2010 in December. Right after we lost control of the House, we passed it out of the House, the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act Lite, I guess I'll call it. No, that's what Rubio wants to do. Ours is really the DREAM Act, in which is similar to Texas law.
Yeah, and it got a majority in the Senate, but a majority isn't what it used to be,
you have
to
have 60 votes.
But I mean, another thing that is now going to be a part of the Democratic platform after President Obama endorsed it is marriage equality. Yeah. And as you know, you know, the Obama administration is no longer defending the Defense of Marriage Act in the courts, and you know, there's a push to repeal that. Where do you stand on this?
Well, I've never supported gay lesbian marriage. In fact, I was in Congress when we did the Act, the Defense of Marriage Act, in the 1990s. We had a Republican Congress and a Democratic president, and they were getting ready to really go after gay lesbian community. And the compromise was is that marriage licenses are a state issue. It's not a federal issue. When my wife and I got married, we went to the county courthouse. We didn't go to the federal courthouse. And that's the compromise. And that allowed, but that law allowed states at that time. The Republican majority in the House was going to send a bill to Bill Clinton that said they were going to outlaw the states from providing gay lesbian marriage. And the compromise was that. Obviously, that was 15, 17 years ago. Maybe it was 96. And things change. I'm not quite there yet, but when people question me, I say, you know, I support INDA. You know, it's... We're actually taking chairs over to our other office. But so I'm not quite there yet. I don't have any problem being in a Democratic national platform. You know, I think it's something that our country needs to address, and we're slowly moving that away because of the acceptance. But and we have a lot of incubator states, so to speak, who have done that. And, you know, I always wonder, though, it's going to end up in the Supreme Court one way or the other, because we do have a full faith and credit requirement in our Constitution. If somebody's married in Massachusetts and comes to Texas, does that automatically mean they're not married? Of course, my response, because I practiced law for years, is that except for the marriage vows, I can do a partnership that would do everything else marriage would do, basically except the sanctity of the state of Texas or, you know, for a marriage license. So.
Well, let's talk about the economy, since that's obviously, you know, the big issue. It seems like, you know, your Republican colleagues talk a lot about jobs, but most of the legislation they seem to want to pass has to do with either repealing health care or putting restrictions on abortion. But what do you want to see done to improve the economy?
Well, since 2010, we've just been stymied by doing anything at all. As Democrats, we had the presidency and the majority in the House and the Senate, even though we didn't have the 60 votes, except for one brief shining moment in the Senate, that we need to return to our country to a manufacturing base. And we're seeing that happen now for lots of reasons. But I represent a blue-collar district. Like I said, I grew up. My history is that I wanted to go to University of Houston. I didn't play football well enough to get a scholarship, and my grades weren't good enough. So I worked my way through school. You cannot do that today. I worked my way through doing an apprenticeship as a printer. That's how my union background. I became a member of the Houston Typographical Union, and now we merged with the Communication Workers Union, and I'm still a member of the union. Our country needs to recapture not only the high-tech jobs that we want, but also manufacturing jobs. In our area, that's what we do. I have 5 refineries and 20-plus chemical plants that the folks in those plants do very well financially. It's hard work, but it used to be you could walk out of high school and get you a job there. Not today. You have to have training, which is typically a community college courses, to go to work for an Exxon or Shell or Lyondell or something like that. But I want our country to recapture that, because if all of us are to be college graduates, which I would love to have, that's not going to happen. There are a lot of kids in my district who don't know what they want to do. Hopefully, as they get older, they'll say, hey, I want to go back to college. But I want them to come out of high school with a way to earn a living. And, you know, either that or they'll go to the military, and that's not going to be, we're ramping down the military so much, that's not going to be an option now, although since 9/11 it has been. But in the Republican majority in the House has been so intransigent on allowing anything that might improve the economy. I mean, it's the same old story. I've been there. The Bush tax cuts, I didn't vote for them in 01 and 03. If you have a debt, you don't cut your revenue. Sure, you cut your spending, but you don't cut your revenue. We cut our revenue in 2001 and 2003. and yet we still spent like drunken sailors. And it, to me, it's disingenuous now for all my Republican colleagues to complain about the debt when these are the same folks who were on Appropriations Committee when they were in charge. We had a Republican president. We had a Republican president in up until 2009. We had a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives up until 2007, from 95 to 2007. And the earlier Republicans were part of that success we had on our economy and the debt. Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich worked together. We had tax increases in 93 and 90 under first President Bush, and then we had a good economy, and we grew into a national, we had a balanced budget in 1999 and 2000 on an annual basis. Sure, we still owed debt, but we were paying down that debt. But starting in 2001, any financial discipline just went out the window, and we cut taxes and raised spending. And the Republicans are now blaming Barack Obama, who'd been there only since 09. And it's just, I hope the American people can see through it. Now, I know a sitting president only has so much time, you can blame it on the previous one. But I'm not talking about blaming it on George Bush. I'm talking about blaming it on the Republicans who are still in control of the House now. They were there. Speaker Boehner was there. The Appropriations Committee members that are in the majority now were there, most of them. And so is Ways and Means. Now, what we need to do is it has to be a combination. To get our economy back, you have to have both federal investment, because if you have a teetering economy, you have to have government spending. The new majority in the House since 11 has decided they're not going to do any government spending. In fact, they just want to cut and also cut taxes. That won't increase our economy. Although they're, because of the where we're at in our politics right now, we may end up just getting past this election and in the next year and seeing what may come out. But Congress has been kicking that can down the road now for 11 years, and we really ought to just belly up and say, hey, let's make some decisions. And I've voted for tax increases that I felt justified, both as a state legislator and in Congress. And I think the American people understand that, you know, if you apply the finances of our individual households, if we're spending too much money, we cut, but then we also go out and get a second job. You should definitely don't tell your employer, by the way, I want a 10% cut in my pay. So we need to look at that. And but right now in the Republican majority in the House and their inability in the Senate to pass anything, that's what we're looking at.
There was just an announcement by Metro there that there's another block of money coming in for light rail construction that affects some of your district. Of course, your colleague, Representative Culberson, got an amendment passed in a House bill that would prevent any federal money from going to the university's line and the Uptown line in his district. Some of us, I think, are hoping that will come out in the Senate version of the bill. Why does Houston have such a hard time getting money for transit?
Well, historically, before John Culberson, Tom DeLay was in majority since 95. Tom DeLay didn't like rail. He was a rubber tire person with support of a lot of the business community at that time, including Mayor Lanier. And but since then, we've had mayors that understand that we need everything. I'm not a toll road advocate. In fact, I fought the Hardy Toll Road because it went right up through my state legislative district. But I also know that we need toll roads. We need everything in Houston. We're going to grow a lot faster, and we need light rail. We need heavy rail in certain areas, whether 290 would be the best option. And we have local Republican support. County judge and previous county judge and even this one support heavy rail on 290, because 290 is now probably the worst freeway in Harris County. And that's saying a lot, because all our freeways are so busy. Gulf Freeway, I-45. The leadership has not supported it up until fairly recently. And when Congressman DeLade resigned, but Congressman Culberson was put on Appropriations Committee, it put him in a way in a position to be able to control, and he was on the Transportation Subcommittee. He got that amendment on there in the majority. It wouldn't happen in a Democratic majority, but it fits in an agreement he and I made that in 2006, when we won the majority, we had never gotten money for light rail. It was all local dollars spent, all our sales tax dollars. I sat down with John Culberson and said, you know, he's still on appropriations, still on the subcommittee on transportation. I said, you know, you have controversy with your line out Richmond, West Park, Southwest Freeway. That's not my business. I want the one coming up through North Line, ultimately, well, and it's tracks in the ground, and also Southeast to serve TSU, U of H, and, you know, the MLK area. That was a referendum that was passed in 2003. I told him, I said, I will not ask for a dime. Democrats were in the majority. I won't ask a dime for your area, but I want you to sign my letter supporting the ones in Congresswoman Lee's in my district. And he agreed to do that if I wouldn't ask for money, because we were in the majority. They hadn't come up with a route out there. Routing is real sensitive. I went through it with Fulton route coming north. The Harrisburg line, that's actually all local money. Metro has had issues with how to, not the route, but how to deal with the property owners on the side. So it's controversial, and that's where we are today. We're getting money for the Southeast and North line. Now, the reason we're doing that, though, is that the referendum in 03, those were the ones that were teamed up first. They were the ones the university line out west was part of the referendum, but the post Oakland, I don't think was, but it was,
that was going to be local money.
Yeah, and but you know, I wanted to start building those spokes out from our backbone that the taxpayers already paid for, and I represent a transit users district. You know, we will do buses, but we'll do light rail too, and. For the first time in my life in Houston, actually my part of town is getting something, some amenity before the Southwest side gets one. And it boggles my mind if the business community and gallery and Greenway Plaza, to me a light rail, wherever they put it, would be a benefit to those businesses, particularly the retail area and the gallery. It would be an asset. But those folks are going to have to talk to their member of Congress, because you know, he's going to be the one that's on the Appropriations Committee. I have to sign off on it. And that's the problem, particularly in a Republican majority. Yeah. But even a Democratic majority, appropriators work with each other across party lines.
Okay.
And I wanted to take that off the, I wanted to take that out of the, when I got him to sign our letter supporting the Southeast and the North Line.
All right. Redistricting. What do you think's ultimately going to happen?
Well, the first federal court plan I thought was fair to Texas. 80% of our growth in Texas was minority, overwhelmingly Hispanic surname, but also about 10% African American to that. And the legislature was not going to do it. I was a state legislator for 20 years involved in redistricting. I don't get a vote now on it, so I have to hire attorneys. Senator Gallegos and Representative Alvarado introduced a plan to create another Democratic district in Harris County. It would be majority Latino. And it lost on the House floor. We submitted it to the federal court because five Democratic members of Congress, Lloyd Doggett, Charlie Gonzalez, myself, Ruben Hinojosa, and Sylvester Reyes in El Paso, hired the same attorney. The reason we could do that, we didn't conflict with each other. There were 200 miles between us in San Antonio and 160 to Austin. So whatever I was wanting to do in Harris County didn't impact Travis County and that side. The federal court recognized that. They didn't give us our second seat in Harris County, though, in their first plan, their first interim plan. That was appealed to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court unanimously said they should have given credit to the state legislative plan, which I questioned, because Texas is, thank goodness, under a Voting Rights Act. And the state of Texas made a decision, you have to get your plan pre-cleared by the Justice Department or by the three-judge panel in Washington, the circuit court there, for have your plan go into effect. The state didn't go to justice. They went to the circuit court. They went late, and so they're trying to run out the clock. But we had a three-judge panel who was already being challenged, or who already created here, and they did a good plan, I thought, that reflected the population. I didn't get the second seat in Harris County, but we picked up three or four of the new seats with the Democrat, and the two we lost in 10, Corpus, Brownsville, and West Texas, San Antonio, and El Paso, would have still been competitive. But it reflected the minority growth in the country. We would pick up, and we did. The Supreme Court ruled. It came back, and the three-judge panel moderated their first plan as an interim plan, because we're only under an interim plan. They moderated it, so it goes back to what we call the two-and-two plan. There were two new Democratic seats and two new Republican seats, which I don't think reflected the real population growth in Texas. And that these are interim plans. The court in D.C. has never struck down the state plan. They had a great hearing. Overwhelming number of witnesses said the state plan violated the Voting Rights Act. The court in San Antonio will probably ultimately be the one who draws it again, although come January, the state legislature will be in again, and like 2003, they'll probably draw congressional districts again. So we may have a San Antonio court plan, a legislative plan. I think the San Antonio court will let the legislature go forward and will be under its interim plan, and that they'll reopen that case depending on what the legislature does. So I have a district. It's hard to find a place in Northeast Harris County I haven't represented already, because I've been through all this. In 2003, the only way they could get me, they took my house out of our district, and I moved. And this year, my Republican friend said, "Gene, we're not going to take your house out." That was nice. I didn't need a new house note, but they changed our district in ways I didn't like, in ways I did like. But that's redistricting. I lost a lot of East Harris County. I lost all of Baytown I have, and most of Channelview. But I picked up inner city. I go down almost to downtown now. And my history, I grew up in near Northside. I went to Jeff Davis High School. It was a majority Hispanic high school, Mexican-American, when I was there in the 60s. And I've been supporting it and working with the students since then, even though I had it in my first congressional district, first 2 years, but I lost it in a court case. And I'm looking forward to, I hate to lose the area I did, but I like picking up the area I grew up in.
And, you know, as I said, you've been in Congress 20 years now. What do you look forward? What do you see for yourself? What would you like to do in the time that you have left in Congress, however long that is?
Well, like I said, Affordable Care Act was the the best thing happened. I would like to come back and actually work on it to fix some of the flaws. And most of the flaws came from the Senate, by the way.
I never doubted that.
Yeah, I used to be a state senator, but our Senate, with a 60-vote rule, did some things. One, and some of them are very medical friendly. In the 90s, to get a handle on our budget, one of the main cuts we did is in provider reimbursement for Medicare. Congress does not have the backbone to do that. So we set this formula up called the strategic rate of growth, that Congress would, doctors and hospitals will say, okay, this is getting doctors, not hospitals, they were exempted. We'll get these reimbursement rates cut over the years. Since 1997, Congress eliminated, they sometimes delay the cuts, sometimes they forget about them, but doctors don't know how much they're going to be reimbursed for 6 months from now for Medicare patients. And I sometimes wonder if that's a Republican plot, because we do have doctors who say, I won't take Medicare because I don't know how much I'm going to get paid. In our district, a doctor, if they're not going to take Medicare, they're not going to be in our district. You know, every medical center, every hospital and medical center takes Medicare. But there are suburban hospitals and doctors doctors who won't take Medicare. But we need to provide a permanent fix to that SGR. And the House bill on the Affordable Care Act had it. We had support of the American Medical Association for the House bill, probably because we did that. But the Senate couldn't fix it, even though it was a big doctor issue. I don't know why all those Republicans in the Senate wouldn't fix it. I'd like to fix that for health care in general. But I'd also like to go back and say, after a few years, the state exchanges may not be really where we want to go. And that's the fear of my Republican friends. They think that may lead to a national health care plan. If that's what the people want, I want to get there, because my goal is to have access to health care, and it shouldn't be based on your income. It should be based on your opportunity to have a doctor or have a clinic and be able to go to a hospital. And so I'd like to go back and revisit it in a reasonable way and not to cut or defund. My colleague Kevin Brady sent out a newsletter that I got. He was proud that they tried to cut and defund Affordable Care Act 33 times. Well, believe me, I voted on opposite of what they did 33 times this last 18 months. That has been their modus operandi. If they don't have anything else to say, well, I want to eliminate Obamacare. You know, President Obama didn't send Congress a bill. That came out of the Energy and Commerce Committee and Ways and Means and Education and Labor Committee. He signed it. He gets the hit calling it Obamacare. I give him speeches on the floor and saying, I wish they'd call it Gene Green Care. I'm so proud of it. But it still needs to be fixed. Anything we pass is not perfect. I'd like to go back and tweak it. But in this majority of Congress, they don't even want to talk reasonable. They just want to abolish it. And believe me, if I had a filibuster, I'd be standing on the House floor filibustering anything to eliminate it, because it's the census number shows in our district 250,000 people will have access to health care under this law once it's put in full effect.
All right.
And I mean, if you're a representative, how could you not be for that? You know.
I hear you. Well, Representative Gene Green, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you.